The next case on the 9 o'clock docket is 09349 Niners v. Ohio Expositions Commission. Mr. Niners, are you familiar with that proceedings?
Pretty much.
So you have 15 minutes. You may reserve time for the rebuttal if you wish.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, may it please the court, I'd like to reserve about 4 minutes at the end.
Okay.
My name is Bob Niners, and I'm the one that was ejected from the Ohio State Fair. Now, this case is about whether the Ohio State Fair has statutory authority to make a rule banning bare feet. It's about whether I failed to state a claim, and it rests on what facts must be pled in the complaint. ESCO says it's just like the library cases, but it's not. It's actually a hard case. It's hard because everyone thinks they already know the answer. You've seen no shirt, no shoes, no service signs. You think that those are based on something legitimate, but they're not. It's all myth and paranoia. Those were originally created to keep out hippies in the late 60s. And over time, people just forgot why those were created, and they rationalized there must be some reason of hazard or whatever. In fact, shoes carry their own set of risks, including high heels getting caught in minor imperfections or breaking an ankle because of it. Nails can go right through rubber soles, and they inject the bacteria in your shoes, and they can cause bone infections that barefooted person would not get. Or even wet flip-flops sliding on tile. Okay. If you look at court cases over that period, there was no increase in injuries, particularly with bare feet. There's no increase in lawsuits. I've done a full license search, at least tried to. There was no particular increase in barefoot lawsuits. I have 12 years of experience going barefoot nearly everywhere without problems. I've gone to the state fair for 12 years until this year because I couldn't get in. I've looked around. It's perfectly safe for bare feet. Okay? Other fairs do not require shoes. I go to Ultimate Dublin Irish Festival. They have a density of people about three times that of the Ohio State Fair. Okay? I've had no problems there. They do not have a shoe rule. Okay? I actually, on Monday, was down at the Muskegon County Fair. Same thing. Now, expert says that a fair is certainly more dangerous than a library. And that may be, but city streets are even more so. Yet, no city or city park bans bare feet. Now, if you think it is overly dangerous to go barefooted, okay, it might just be that your feet are tender, okay? However, that applies to jogging too. If you don't normally jog and suddenly start, you're going to start huffing and puffing, you're not going to feel good, your muscles are going to hurt the next day, you might even get a heart attack and die, okay? Yet, you don't see Columbus banning jogging, okay? Jogging can't kill you, but it has other benefits. And it's a personal liberty that hurts nobody else. Now, the purpose of notice pleading is to give notice of the claim. York made it clear that it's unsupported legal conclusions that can be a problem. And the Miller case makes it clear that pleading operative facts with particularity applies only to a few carefully circumscribed exceptions. This is not one of those exceptions. Now, Hickman is the case that they use as talking about unsupported language. But when you look at the head notes, the introduction of Hickman, what you see is what that means is not supported anywhere, not necessarily not supported in the complaint. If you look at it, Hickman, in his complaint, cited cases that actually contradicted what his conclusions were. That's not what's going on here. The statement of facts in the appellant's brief omits all or part of many fair paragraphs in the complaint as not being real facts, as not being supported. Okay? There are paragraphs 7, 8, 9, 13, 15, and 16. I don't have time to examine them all. So let's just look at paragraph 13, which said, "The shoe rule arbitrarily, capriciously, and unreasonably singles out bare feet as a hazardous footwell condition." However, paragraph 12 said that I wrote a letter to Expo, end quote, provided information that bare feet are not unduly safe and that shoes are the possible causes of other injuries. That was a 6-page letter with 16 scientific journal articles attached for a total of 147 pages. That's support. Paragraphs 7 and 8 address the definitions of the rule in the Ohio Revised Code and the rulemaking process. And it refers directly to the Ohio Revised Code. That's support. All of the missing paragraphs are supportable and supported. Maybe just look at my memo contra to dismiss and also in my appellant brief. The General Assembly has crafted a careful, explicit, and mandatory oversight mechanism to examine agency rulemaking. It is ordered to keep agencies accountable to the legislature. They are not allowed to make policy. That is the legislature's job. The Joint Committee on Agency Review was created to provide the legislative oversight. In addition, EXCO is not even granted the authority to make rules, except if you look at the code, the junior exhibitions, and credit cards. It is required that there be an intelligent principal in order to do any sort of rulemaking at all. I somewhat whimsically suggested looking at the hypothetical floppy hat sunburn rule to highlight that there is no policy statement, okay, if you cannot tell where a boundary is. Rulemaking needs to be canalized, to quote Justice Cardozo. It's not. If EXPO really has plenary powers, they claim, then you should have no doubt to say, oh yes, they can make this sunburn rule, okay? Can you really do so? Another case is, if there's any doubt as to a grant of power, then you have to rule against that actual grant. Now, I stress the SHU rule is a police power regulation to highlight that it's really a rule. It's not a condition for admission. It's a rule. It's like legislation. Okay? It goes well beyond EXPO managing their property. Okay? Police power is entrusted to the General Assembly, not to agencies, unless it has been specifically granted to them. EXPO also tries to skirt rulemaking by saying the SHU rule is just a condition for admission. It's part of the ticket price. It turns out the state parks have a statutory grant that they can make a rule to charge fees. Now, they've not done so, but they tried in 2005, and Jay Carr turned it down. But suppose that they don't have the power to charge a fee. Does that mean from then on they're exempt from the whole rulemaking process? Because they no longer have to make rules. When anybody comes to a park, they can just say, oh, we're charging a fee. It's a condition for admission now. We don't have to go through the rulemaking process anymore. Of course not. Switching gears slightly, regarding the pleading of facts, how else would you plead this? EXCO was given notice of exactly what they had to defend against. I don't need to prove facts at this stage. Furthermore, this is a request for declaratory judgment, and the Hickman-like cases were not. Of course you have to plead legal issues, since in a declaratory judgment, the court declares the legal relation between the parties. You've got to say what you're doing in that regard. EXCO is also likely in this case to res judicata. However, there is no binding precedent. First of all, federal decisions on state law are not binding on state courts. This applies to my old federal library lawsuit, which is really a First Amendment case mostly. It also applies to the Christian case that EXCO likes to cite. Also, my previous state law case is also not binding. For one thing, the authorizing statute is completely different. Libraries are authorized to make rules for the proper operation and management of the library. EXCO has no such rulemaking grant, again, except junior exhibitions and credit cards. What EXCO is authorized to do without rulemaking is to maintain and manage their property. I am not their property. EXCO is only authorized to conduct the fair, not legislate. Now, going back to the Christian case that EXCO relies upon, what's important here, I think, is an unambiguous statute means what it says. State law unambiguously says that actions must be taken in open meeting. And it says that rules must be granted. It says there's a rulemaking mechanism that must be used by state agencies. Christian really didn't examine that very carefully because it was focusing on the First Amendment issues. Okay? In fact, it pretty much ignored the whole rulemaking and oversight mechanism. Why? Well, my guess is probably the attorney didn't brief that. However, if you can ignore the rulemaking statutes whenever you want to, why bother having them? Moving on, let me address the trial judge's decision. She quoted the appropriate standard, no provable set of facts warrant relief. But then she didn't follow it. Okay, quoting, the court agreed with defendants that the fair shoe requirement protects both the health and safety of fair patrons and is consistent with the general welfare of fairgoers. But that's a factual conclusion. This is a 12B6 motion to dismiss. He have to go to 12C before even do facts of, you know, questions of deciding law. She made a factual conclusion. Health and safety is irrelevant if EXCO has any rulemaking authority. Health and safety is irrelevant if the rule is a violation of Christian liberty. And finally, what remedy am I asking for? Well, of course, reverse and remand. But this is a hard case, so I'm also suggesting that you provide the lower court instructions regarding rulemaking, statutory authority, and the effect of personal liberty. That is, regulations must protect others from a person, not a person from him or herself. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We've got about 5 minutes remaining, so I can go.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Jones.
Good morning. Please support. I don't want to regurgitate the content of the brief, so let me try to do this a little bit differently. This case is about just one thing. Does EXCO have statutory authority to create a rule for condition of admission to the 12-day Ohio State Fair? Their statute says essentially two things. One, they're to maintain and manage the property. And two, hold an annual state fair that's amplified by it's supposed to be a safe and fun venue for that fair. Now, there are many, actually, conditions for admission to the fair. Many of them are not written. One of them is paying the admission price, for instance. There are also many things that could get you thrown out of the fair that aren't enumerated in any kind of rule, because that all has to do with their judgment about what is necessary to accomplish that statutory goal of having a safe and entertaining fair. In this particular case, for instance, outside of that gate, that's also EXCO property. All of it is, up to Crew Stadium and the McDonald's and the hotels. They're not saying, here's a rule you can't go barefoot on EXCO property. They're just talking about the Ohio State Fair. That was done to accomplish two purposes. One, for the safety of the patrons that they're inviting in, because perhaps they don't know everything that's there, from carnival rides to porta potties to animals or whatever. Maybe people don't know all of the obstacles that there might be to barefoot people. And two, it's to protect us, frankly, from lawsuits. Why take that additional chance when we have wires, people can step on your feet, you could have any number of people say you should have known that barefoot people would have been exposed to this hazard, and though I think they probably wouldn't be successful in those lawsuits, I don't want to have to defend them. Apart from that, I don't think I have anything to add if you don't have any questions.
Any questions? No? Thank you, Mr. James. Mr. Lewis, you have about 5 minutes remaining.
First of all, I think admission price falls under the definition of conducting a fair. It's not legislating, okay, which is what I'm concerned about with the rulemaking. Yes, they do have plenty of other rules on their sign, okay, if you look at them, one of which is illegal weapons are not permitted. Well, you don't need a rule like that. If they're illegal, they're already violating the statute. He says there are things you can do that will get you thrown out. Well, yeah, they're probably disorderly conduct, okay? There already exists a whole statutory scheme of crimes of one sort or another that address his concerns, okay? Now, he's concerned about safety and being protected from lawsuits. One thing that really bothers me about that is protect yourself from a lawsuit can be used to prohibit anything they want. They could get sued for somebody for not warning somebody that they could get a sunburn by being at the fair all day long. They're not used to being at the fair all day long. Anybody can file a lawsuit for any reason. some folks would say this is one of those, but we'll ignore that for a moment. I think if any of you were a trial judge and a barefoot lawsuit came upon you, the first thing you'd probably think of is primary assumption of the risk. You decided, well, maybe that's too strong. The next thing you think of would be comparative negligence, and the barefooted person is certainly more than 50% negligent. Okay? I really think that is just an excuse to say, okay, we've got to defend our rules somehow. Okay? And here's how we can do it. It was interesting, the library case, and Judge Sadler, I know you were not here on that one. There was a question of whether libraries had sovereign immunity or not, or a condition, whatever it was called. The statute is really clear. They have it. Okay? But it's still kind of all, we still have to worry about lawsuits. Let me just ask one thing of you. If you do rule against me, I would appreciate just what did I miss? And this is supposed to be a failure to state a claim. What did I leave out? What more could I have said would have made this a claim that I could have stated? And finally, I know this looks really trivial, okay? It's about bare feet. Yes, I recognize that, okay? We all have things that we like to do, many of which seem odd. Golf, tennis, all sorts of stuff that actually could possibly get injured on. For tennis courts, I mean, geez, well, I know there's a recreational exception to that. But the real issue here, I think, is do all state agencies really have to follow the Ohio Revised Code or not? Or does the Ohio State Fair somehow get a special exemption? Okay? Don't they need authority like everybody else? The Ohio Supreme Court requires strict adherence to the rulemaking statutes. They've got nothing in it that says you may make a rule. Department of Health says you may make rules. There's a whole different list of research and rules that they can make. According to them, all that the legislators had to do to properly authorize the Department of Health was say you have the power to make health the rules. Okay? That's not the case. There's got to be more than that for an intelligible principle. Okay, now, you know, you can say, well, yeah, this is a special case. It's because bare feet are not that important. However, a different, more non-trivial case come along, you've got the precedent, in which case you're forced with either ignoring the precedent or just not acknowledging that this case exists. But then that wouldn't be justice, would it? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both. The case has been submitted and you will be advised in writing of our opinion. That concludes the Lord Act document. Mr. Canada, you may adjourn.
All right. Hear me, the pause before the field pass having to adjourn to chambers. I'm